Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, ownership, and especially for real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the experts, free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant, broker owner of United Country Real Estate, Land Pro, buying and selling homes, land and farms in Western Piedmont, North Carolina, or Southern Virginia. Just give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our office is at 3349 Cook School Road in Pilot Mountain, North Carolina, Highway 52, exit 136, across from Foothills Hardware and Building Supply. We also share office space with POP Designs, point of purchase designs for all your graphic needs. Our company website is www.mylandpro.com. Our guest today is John Yelm. He's an accredited land consultant like myself, auctioneer, broker, owner of the Ace Company and Spencer Ira. Welcome, John.
How are you?
Doing great, buddy. Hadn't seen you since Nashville at the land convention.
Yeah, those are great.
I know. You're going to the next one coming up in March?
We're going to try.
Yeah, me too, buddy. It's always a good time, isn't it?
Yeah.
How many years you been a member of RLI?
Long time, maybe 25, 28 years.
Really? Wow. I've got about 18 in or 19, I can't remember. But what an organization. It's fun to get together. And we have some of the best speakers, and we're always current on what's going on in the land industry. And people like Russell Riggs, our head lobbyist in Washington for the National Association for the Realtors Land Institute. And it's just some of the best in the country, right?
Yeah, I go back to when it was the old FLI, Farm and Land.
Really? Yeah. We changed names, what, like six times? We'll be 75 years old next year?
We're still the Farm and Land chapter of the RLI.
Are you really?
Yes.
And so that's probably one of the oldest chapters, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I think we might be chapter number two or something like that.
Because I remember, we've switched back, but when I joined, we were chapter 33, which was... North Carolina.
There were great names that started that organization. Randy Hertz's dad was one of the guys that started that.
Is that right?
Yep.
Wow. You do go back a little bit. Well, let's talk about you and your company and what's going on and your extended market out there. You grew up in the south of Royal in Clay County. Where's that located in the state?
Northwest part of Iowa.
Okay. And you went to Iowa State University. What a great school. Received a B.S. in agricultural business. Were your family farmers historically?
Yes. My great-grandfather came over, and my grandfather and uncle were farmers in the area.
Wow. Do you still have some family land?
Yeah. We have moved to a different county. My brothers, and one of my brothers has passed away, but my brothers both took over the family operation and have that in Northwest Iowa.
What do they grow there?
Corn and soybeans for the most part.
Gotcha. That's pretty popular in your area, right?
Welcome to Iowa.
There you go. Well, we do a little bit of that here in North Carolina as well. We throw in a little tobacco to kind of diversify. So you remember the Alpha Gamma Rio fraternity. That's, I assume, is an agricultural fraternity base.
Yeah, Alpha Gamma Rho, you were an agger and a strong chapter at Iowa State, and it was made up of people that were getting an ag degree.
Gotcha. And I'm sure they're still around.
Yeah, there's 85, 90 guys in the house, and we've recently added on to the house and improved, and I think they live pretty good there.
Right. What was your initiation? You had to go out in the dark and plant corn in a straight row or something?
We can't talk about that in public.
I understand. So, you founded, you've been a realtor since 1981. You founded the Acre Company, I love your name, in 1988. You're also a graduate of Madison City College in auctioneering.
Mason City.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Forgive me, Mason. I see it right here. Active in farm and real estate sales exchanges. I'm assuming that's 1031s. Multiple ownership sales and development and land acquisitions. So you got quite a background and a lot of good stuff to talk about today on the show. You're also, as I mentioned, a member of the Realtors Land Institute. And on your website, you promote full-time farm real estate sales, private sales, auctions. You're also licensed in Iowa, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Minnesota. Percentage-wise, where do you do most of your business? I assume it's Iowa.
Yeah. I've done some in Minnesota. We've sold a few farms in Minnesota. The majority of our work is in Northwest Iowa. We've done basically all over Iowa. And I did help the guy with an auction out in Nebraska not too long ago this fall in October. But for the most part, we auction and sell farms in Northwest Iowa. I get to look at quite a bit of stuff in Minnesota for different clients that I work with. And we have auctioned all around the state of Iowa for other real estate companies and farm managers as well.
Right, sort of like Dale Fulp and I do. My company didn't have an auction license, so Dale's with Rogers Realty and Auction. And we've been co-teaching one of our RLI classes, as you know, since 2003, the Land 101 base course. So, in fact, we got one we were making a proposal to on Friday here locally. That's a little million-dollar-plus project, and hopefully got a client that wanted to list it. He came in, and he said, I need to sell this thing, like, quick. And I said, well, you don't want to list it. You want to auction it. So we're going to meet with him. Let's talk a little bit about some of the different states that you participate in. Iowa specifically, and this is Wikipedia stuff, but just to give our listening audience some background for those that aren't familiar, and then, of course, please chime in. It's a Midwestern state bordered by Mississippi River on the east and Missouri with the Big Sioux River in the west, and it bordered by six states, Wisconsin in the northeast, Illinois to the east, Missouri to the south, Nebraska to the west, South Dakota to the northwest, and Minnesota due north. In colonial times, Iowa was part of the French Louisiana and the Spanish Louisiana. And its state flag is a pattern after the flag of France. It's a beautiful flag. And after the Louisiana Purchase, people laid foundation to the agriculture-based economy in the heart of the Corn Belt. So I guess the Native Indians had corn, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So later in the 20th century, the Iowa's agriculture economy made a transition to diversify the economy, advanced manufacturing, processing, financial services, information technology, biotechnology, and green energy products. You're the 26th most extensive in land area and the 30th most populous of the 50 states. Your capital and the largest city by far is Des Moines, Iowa. Now, how far do you live in relationship from Des Moines?
We're about 3 hours.
South?
Des Moines is pretty much centralized in the state.
Gotcha.
And, we're about, 190, 200-mile drive, something like that.
Right. Your nickname's the Hawkeye. How about that? That's pretty interesting.
Well, some of us that went to Iowa State, we're more Cyclone-type fans.
I gotcha.
Hawkeyes tend to be University of Iowa.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. So Iowa's main agricultural products are hogs, corn, soybean, oats, cattle, eggs, and dairy products. Again, pretty similar to what we do here in North Carolina.
We have prime beef, though.
Yeah. I'm sure it's a lot different.
Our meat here that we raise is sought after by the world as some of the finest restaurant meat anywhere.
What type of cows are those?
Well, they're beef cattle, and they're, they're everything from Angus, Hereford, crossbreds to they might have Simmental in them, they're limousine. They're
quite diverse,
kind of
yeah.
A blend of maybe everything.
Right. And now
most of our, some of our cattle are raised locally. We feed them here, but a lot of them come from the western states and Canada.
So you auction those too, right? Obviously, when you sell farms and stuff, right?
We do what?
You auction the cows or other livestock, right? When you're doing auction sales?
Not typically. Cattle have wheels under them, so they can be on a truck. And we sold a cow farm this spring that was 300 and some acres. We had outstanding sale. But those cattle, he moved the cattle with his move. The cattle went with him.
I gotcha. So your main agriculture, again, we talked about, Ours, the nation's largest producer of ethanol and corn, and some years the largest grower of soybeans. In 2008, there were 92,600 farms in Iowa, and 19% of the nation's corn, 17% of the soybeans, 30% of the hogs, and 14% of the eggs. So you not only feed America, but you help feed the world, too.
And ethanol gets kind of a bad rap. I'm going to give a quick commercial.
Yeah,
not
please.
Only is it probably one of the cleanest burning gasoline additives and actually cleans the environment up, but that's one reason we have a lot of cattle and livestock and dairies in Iowa and in the Midwest. We actually enhance, by the time we get through running our corn through the ethanol plant, it comes out as a foodstuff.
Really?
And unbelievable, the ethanol byproducts that we feed to our cattle is a high-protein feed that we mix with lesser with carbohydrates, like everything from stockage to grass to you name it. But the ethanol byproducts that are fed to cattle is one of the reasons that we have a lot of cattle fed in Iowa. So actually, everybody thinks that you use up the corn in an ethanol plant, and therefore somehow you're ruining food or you're taking away from some starving person. And in reality, we make a great food product for our livestock coming out of the ethanol plant, and actually have more livestock to feed at a lesser cost than if we didn't have ethanol.
Wow. So it's 100% utilization of the product, right?
100% plus, yes, because we pull off some of the carbohydrates to make ethanol, and that takes the that in turn raises the protein level of the byproduct that comes out the backside of the ethanol plant. So we actually have a better food product to feed our livestock than before.
What corn product are you using? Are you using the one with 80% less water? What type of corn are you growing out there?
I'm not exactly sure of your question.
Well,
I'm
not an expert at it.
We don't have a lot of irrigation out here, so when we have irrigation, it's God provided. And, there are drought resistant corn that we have,
right.
But that's more of an enhancement to get you through a dry summer if it happens. It isn't necessarily a more efficient corn, I don't think. What it is it allows it has a different breeding in it that allows you to, the corn has a certain breeding period and that needs rain to make ears, and that is extended on a drought resistant corn to where it's not as critical to have rain in a 7-day period. It might be more like a 14 or 21 day period.
Gotcha. So, okay. Weather this year has kind of affected crops, hasn't it?
Yeah, we just about planted in a snowstorm, and then we got two of the biggest rains we've ever seen during the summer, and, like 500 or 100-year rains, and then we have an extremely wet fall again with cold weather and rainy weather. So it's been a tough year. We started out cold and wet. We had a wet during the season and a lot of drowned outs and a lot of hail and high winds. And then we've gotten now to where we pretty well got harvested, but we've got some corn and beans still out in the field. Now it's raining and cold again. So we've got a little ways to go, but we came a long ways in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
But you're getting pretty close to the frost time, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, and some of the ground's going to have to freeze to harvest because the ground's wet and they're probably going to need, some of the corn and beans need the ground to be froze so they can get through it.
Right. It's our pleasure today to talk to John Yelm. This is Lou Jewell. Let's Talk Land. All right. Our guest today is John Yelm with Auction Company in Spencer, Iowa. Welcome back. Let's talk about some of these issues. I was just looking at one of your auctions, John, coming up on November the 8th, Thursday, 10 o'clock, in Dickens Community Center in Dickens, Iowa. It's 230.6 acres. And, of course, out west, you guys, we have meets and bounds here, and you have blocks and blocks out there. So you're more squared up. But you wouldn't believe what the surveys do to some of our land around here. But
you'd love it. We've got in the Clay County Courthouse here, they've done an outstanding job. They went back and the old surveys, they had a covered wagon or a wagon that they went out, and the first crew went in and did the counties and the townships and laid them out. And then later another crew would come in and do the sections, 640 acres, a square right. 640 acres, and they'd use chains and rods. And those old surveys are accurate, but it was amazing that they didn't, you know, they couldn't carry enough equipment with them, and they didn't have a very big budget, and they were traveling by covered wagon. So they would go out in the middle of the prairie, and they would use anything they could find, and oftentimes they use a rock and would chip it and make a pointed rock, and that's how they marked the section corners.
Huh.
So, and those old surveys, our county, they went and laminated all of them a few years ago. They're in books in the basement in the engineer's office. We have a fantastic engineer's office down there, but you can go grab the old survey from 1858, 1865, 1870, and see how it goes forward then, and then it gets resurveyed back 20, 30 years next up, and then on and on and on. But they're just fascinating old surveys of, and how accurate they are is unbelievable.
You'll appreciate this. Let's see if I can find it here real quick. One of my surveyors in Virginia took a picture of a road plaque, okay, in the western or central part of Virginia. And it says, an Indian deed, it says, Israel Friend in 1727 secured a deed from an Indian chief in the Five Nations, beginning at the mouth of the Antietam Creek and thence to the Potomac River, 200 shoots as far as an arrow can be slung out of the bow, thence 100 shoots right back to the river, then squared till the intersection with the creek. So
wow.
Evidently they use bows and arrows.
Yeah, we could go on and tell all kinds of stories. But well, our land patents in the 1800s were usually signed by somebody in Washington, Secretary of State. And if like in Buena Vista County, the next county to the south, you know, you go to the recorder's office and you get out the old handwritten books from the 1800s. And oftentimes those are Mr. Grant signed those, or Abraham Lincoln,
wow.
or somebody signed those original land patents back in the 1800s. It's fascinating.
We have, and I was actually teaching in Murfreesboro, Dale and I were a number of years ago, Tennessee, and the second day one of the students brought this framed document with a seal from the king. It was a land grant.
Wow.
But it actually had the wax seal and the signature of the king granting this bounty of acreage in Tennessee. So history is a lot of fun.
We had some land grants that were after the Civil War that were given to soldiers
right.
and generals and stuff. And then the other thing is we have a land grant university, Iowa State University, but it just wasn't for Iowa State. It was for other land grant universities. But they would donate so many sections of ground, and then that land was sold, and the money was given to start a university. That's how they funded some of the major colleges in the Midwest.
Wow, that's interesting. So going back to your playbill here for your auction, I noticed a description here. You're doing several tracks, but it says an inside, all-tillable, very gently rolling track containing 109.1 FSA crop acres estimated. Well, what's the acronym FSA, and what's the background on that? We got a show long enough to talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Welcome to Iowa. It stands for Farm Service Administration.
Right.
It's the old ASDS office, and it's the government agricultural offices are broken down into the FSA office and the NRCS office, the old Soil Conservation SDS office. So FSA crop acres are Farm Service Administration, and that's the ones that, you know, write the checks and determine the bases and yields and all that good stuff.
So how does that affect the value of land in your area, plus or minus, or nothing?
Well, okay, looking at a piece of farm ground, and by the way, I get a kick because every even local area has its own nomenclature, and we call an inside farm a farm that has a road on one side. in northwest Iowa, that's considered an inside tract or an inside farm. We were selling some land down by Omaha in Council Bluffs, outside of Council Bluffs, earlier this year, and I called a farm an inside farm down there. And one guy corrected me. He says, no, there's a road on that farm. Down there, an inside farm is a farm in the middle of the section that doesn't have a public road to it. So Right. You kind of got to be careful where you're at and how you call them. But the first thing we look at is the percent of tillable. So if you have 160 acres or a quarter section and typically would have a road on two sides and it's a 33 feet right-of-way on your side of the road, so 33 feet. So for every quarter of a mile, there's an acre. So, you know, 5,280 divided by 2 is 2,640 divided by 2 is 1,320 times 33 is 43,556 feet. And square feet. So you would typically have 4 acres of road right away on 160 acres if it's a square true quarter section. So that's pretty much a rule of thumb. And if it's an inside quarter, then you would only have 2 acres of road. So the higher percentage of tillable, the more valuable the farm is, because we value farm ground in dollars per tillable acre. So the more tillable acres you have on a farm, the higher percentage of tillable, and that's, you know, you got several ways of looking at a farm for value, but we start with the number of acres that are tillable,
okay.
And our second is the soil quality, and that's where your CSR or CSR2 comes in, is the quality of the soil. So we deal with the percent of the farm that's tillable, and then the quality of the soil, and then after that, then we get into drainage and tile and stuff like that.
I see again on your playbill here, you have a soils map. And then you also talk about the specific soils and what percentage of the farm is. And then there's a code. What's the code there? Like 1388, Claritin loam, 2 to 6% slopes, CRS 2, 89, CSR 74. Translate.
Okay. The code is just what is the, we used to use the letters. And so Clarion used to be CL, Nicolette was NC, Webster was W something. Now we use a number, and so it's uniform across the state and okay. Actually uniform across states. And so that is the code is how the soil is on the map. So if you see a 55 in a soil area, that's a Nicolette clay loam out. Standing soil, Clarion Nicolette. They're usually named after a town. There's a Nicolette in Minnesota. There's a Clarion in Iowa. So flat, black, north-central Iowa farm ground, north-central farm ground. And the CSR stands for corn suitability rating, and it came out in the 70s and early 80s. They determined a formula for coming up with a number, and it's not quite like a productivity index, and we can talk about that later in other states, but a CSR, I view it more like judging a skater or a cattle, group of cattle. It's a number for how good the soil is, and it's based on five factors, and it has to do with slope, the ability to hold water, the ability to perform different things, and it also was based on if you could, you know, what it, how much power it took to work it, but it's 0 to 100, and a CSR in our area, the old CSRs varied per state. The new CSR2 took climate out of it, so it doesn't matter if it's in eastern Iowa, western Iowa, northern or southern Iowa, it's the same.
Okay.
So they took that out. They also took slope out of the formula. They still have slope in the formula, but they reduced it because in the old days, the corn suitability rating, we plowed. With plowshares, we flipped the ground black. It eroded. You take a hill and plow it, you're going to have problems. Now we use minimum till, no till. So just because you have a slope doesn't mean you have a problem. So okay. They took slope out of the formula. They took weather out of the formula. And it's probably a truer scale. And so there's a number that's assigned to each soil type.
Okay.
And so they take the number of acres times that soil type. And then times the CSR. And so if you have a percentage of, they have the number of acres of each soil type, times by the CSR. They average it out, and you get a weighted average for the farm of how does that soil on that farm, how does it average, and how can I compare it to the farm across the road or a farm 10 miles away or a farm 50 miles away. And how we use this formula is pretty simple. We get down to dollars per tillable acre. In our, we have a big flow chart we use, but everybody in Iowa does this about the same way. Some do it differently. But
right.
Dollars per tillable acre divided by the average CSR, corn suitability rating, and now we're using CSR2, the new one.
Right.
That will give you a dollars per CSR point per tillable.
Okay.
So typically it runs from $95 to $108 per CSR point. So grabbing a calculator, let's say I have an 80 CSR farm, and I figure it's at $105 per CSR point times an 80 CSR. That farm should be about $84 per tillable acre, if I'm right on my numbers.
Okay.
And what we do is we look at comparable sales, get dollars per acre, dollars per crop acre, divided by the corn suitability rating, and then we can compare that farm to other farms using the dollars per CSR.
Wow, that's a long way to get to. We just go out there and say, here's a nice piece of pasture or crop land, and it's 4,000 an acre, you want to make an offer.
That won't fly in Iowa.
Oh, I see that. And we have that here, too, to some degree, but not quite as sophisticated.
Do you have productivity indexes?
Yeah, we do.
In Minnesota, they have them. They have them in South Dakota. They have CPIs in South Dakota. And what they do out there, the way you figure it, is let's say you have a farm with a 75 CPI. If the county will average, say, 40 bushel of wheat in some dry land situations, so if the county average is 40 and you have a 75 CPI, you take your 40 bushels times 0.75, and you should be able to get 30 bushel of wheat on that farm.
Wow, crazy.
So it's a little different fact out there. In Iowa, it's not based on that. It's just based on the quality of the soil.
And how does that affect the value of the property? Of course, that's supply and demand. That depends on the economy. You know, I know we only got about a minute in this section, but I remember over the years when we get together, John, you know, we're talking about if we go back, you know, well, you know, this track we just sold brought $1,900 an acre, and then a couple years later it was $28, and then we got in that boom, and then it got up to sometimes the stories you were telling me was like $20,000 an acre for farmland. It's crazy. Is the prices still up now?
Prices are not as strong as they were 3 or 4 years ago when we were selling $7 corn 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
They're still reasonably strong, and as people's outlooks have changed, as the economy in the United States has changed, as our money's gotten devalued, and as we've spent more money overseas in our country, you know, everybody says, why is ground worth $10,000 an acre? I'm not sure ground is worth $10,000 an acre. I'm just not sure your money's worth anything.
Yeah.
Because when you know, if you got to spend $75,000 to buy a Chevy Tahoe, maybe your money's not quite worth as much as we used to think it was.
Yeah, I hear you. I complain about lawnmowers and what you have to pay for them compared to a Mercedes Benz. You know, the technology and the it's boy, they've got the hood overs. Hey, we're talking to John Yelm. This is Lou Jewell. Let's Talk Land. Our guest now is John Elms with the auction company in Spencer, Iowa. Welcome back, John.
It's Acre Company, Bob.
I'm sorry. And forgive me. I'm almost be 70 here pretty soon. It's getting rough on the old boy here. I want to finish up on this playbill on this particular farm. You've got another insert on your promotion sheet here. And it says FSA information, cropland acres. Now, we're talking about this auction you got coming up in Dixon's Community Center on November the 8th, 2018 at 10 a.m. It says crop acres, 225.79. Corn base acres, 177.25. Corn PLC yield, 147. Soybean base acres, 42.97. Soybean PLC yield, 42. So you're giving yields on two different crops, right?
Right. Two different crops.
Right. So what does all that mean to me if I'm an investor for farmland?
These base acres are based on previous history of the farm going back years. And so the FSA, there's so many crop acres, and that's tillable acres, number of tillable acres that the Farm Service Administration has assigned to that farm. And then the tillable acres are broke down into crop acres of different crops. So we have on this one, we have corn base acres and soybean base acres. And those are the amount of acres that they will allow you to raise and still stay in the farm program and can receive subsidies or can receive program payments if they become available. Then they're based on yield, and the PLC yield is based on 5 years yield average. And you can elect different types of programs to put the farm into. This particular farm is in PLC, so it was signed up that way a few years ago, so it continues on as such. And those, while they're not necessarily accurate for what you can raise, these are an average of what has been raised in a certain period of years in the past.
Wow. So give me a strategy on this auction you got coming up, if you can disclose that. Looks like you're auctioning off four different parcels. Is that right? A 230.6 acre, a 76.2, and an 80 acre section. Do you sell those individually and then come back and block those? Where they rebid and put one or two or three together? Or what's your strategy on selling property like this?
Good question. We have a little different style that's been copied a lot. We call it the choice method.
Okay.
Years ago, most auctioneers would have two or three tracks in a large track. They would auction each piece and hold the bid, and then they would combine it. And if one person bid more than those three, then that guy would own all three tracks, and the sale was over.
Right.
I thought that was unfair. In the 80s, we were selling some ground, and a young man bought a 40, was trying to buy a 40, and he bid several hundred dollars an acre more, but the guy that threw the bid over the top got the whole thing. So I came up with this method, the choice method. In this particular farm, we took the 230 acres and divided it, and we kept it government lot, so it's 120 and 110, but because it was surveyed and they were off a couple acres, but anyway, we're selling it as 119 and 111. And so the successful bidder, you can buy, the guy that gets the high bid at the end of the sale can decide if he wants to buy the west portion or the east portion, or he can take them both.
Okay.
You want to own a half of it, you can do that. If you want to buy the whole thing, you can do that. And if he only wants half, then we'll just start the sale over for the other half, and we won't go back and sell it again when we're done. Hmm. And there, when you get George Clift and everybody together in the room, everybody's got a different idea on
exactly
what's the best way to do it. This is the way that we're the most comfortable with. And a lot of times on a quarter section, we'll sell it as 280s if it divides and farms well that way. If not, we'll sell it as a quarter. But typically, that way, if young guy can only afford an 80, he can bid up and he can own it. And then we'll just sell the other 80. And it allows the seller to get oftentimes the most money by allowing the buyer to bid aggressively what they want to buy. We think if you give the buyer say-so on a sale, they'll bid and bid and bid. Now, I've been to a lot of national conventions and stuff, and the big guys stand up and say, we set the sale up for the seller. Well, yeah, that's fine and dandy, but I've never sold a farm to a seller.
Yeah.
I've tried to set the sale up for the buyer.
Right,
and
exactly.
I think if I do a good job of setting the sale up for the buyer, I think the seller's happier.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
That's my opinion. This particular sale, the old auctioneers will tell you, I'm one of those now, you sell the most important important item first, and then sell the. And so in this particular sale, not only is our large track our best track quality wise, but it also is the most dollars.
Right.
So we're selling that first, and then once that one's sold, we pretty well made the sale. And then the 76 acres that we'll sell second is a pretty good farm. It's not as good soil-wise as the main track. And then we have a lighter 80-acre parcel that only has a 55 CSR2. That would be a medium-quality farm in our area. It has some sand underneath it. And while it's a productive farm, it's a good-looking farm, it just doesn't have the soil types that the other two do, and we will sell that one third.
Gotcha. Do you guys hear, you know, Bracky Rogers and I guess several others, he was national president, you know, and of course Mark followed, and of course Mark's son is like got the International Auctioneer Award. He travels all over the rural on assignment, heavy equipment or equipment is his specialty, but they charge a 10% buyer's premium. How do you guys do that out there?
I wish. No, we do have guys in the state of Iowa and Minnesota. There are some pretty hefty buyer's premiums paid in Minnesota. There are some paid in Iowa. To date, we have not gone that route. We have seller paid, and it's pretty reasonable. Auctioning is different than listing.
Right.
When we take an auction, we pretty well assured we're going to sell it. I can tell you the date we're going to sell it, and I can tell you the day we're going to close it. So it's a little different than a listing. Listings are a little more, you're not, you know, you never really guaranteed they're going to sell, and
that's
you're never
right.
really sure when they're going to bring an offer in, so there's a little more inherent risk involved for the most part. So
plus when you
an auction is a little more of established business, but Northwest Iowa is pretty competitive, so right. those kinds of fees are
yeah. well, plus
10%. I that would not fly in Iowa, because if we sold a $2 million farm, I don't think the buyer is going to be all that excited about writing us a check for $200.
No, I understand. And, of course, as we know, we're not supposed to discuss commissions, but, you know, that's a negotiating number, you know, based on the market and the property. So, but
there are some buyer's premiums paid in Iowa. There are, not every sale has them.
Right. Every place is different, right, and it all changes. But I know the auctions I've done with Dell, I'm not an auctioneer, so I co-list, and then Dell's the crier and handles the deal.
Yep.
But when you go list a property, one thing you do is you establish a price. It ain't going to be any more than your established list price, and usually you negotiate it down. But in an auction, there's no established price. And so the sky's the limit. It's, you know, whatever. It's
The sky's the limit, but usually most sellers do have an idea of they'd sure like to have X amount of dollars, you know.
Oh, I understand. But it's just a different strategy. And, you know, if there's a reason that you do have auctions as opposed to listings. So, you know, I'm working on one right now here locally that's a pretty sizable home, you know, 5,000 square feet, four-car garage, 1,000 square foot garage, so on. But it's got 70-some acres within a pond and a workshop building, a lot of road frontage, and drop-dead views of our local mountains, and just high-quality soils. And part of it's planted in Loblolly forestry, and it's in a land use program. So that's one of the programs we have here that reduces the taxes if you meet certain criteria. You know, the guy came to me to list it, and as we talked, I said, what's your motivation? He said, I need to sell it as quick as possible. I said, well, you don't need to list it. We need to auction it. You know, you put something on the market, it could be a long time, and it's already been on the market for a while with another agent. So we're making a proposal on that on Friday and see where he wants to go with it.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you. Anything else on your flyer here that we need to talk about?
Well, there's some awfully nice pictures, and if anybody would like to check out some of our auctions and some of our properties, they can go to theacrecode.com and actually look at these and see what you're talking about.
Yeah, please do
that.
On
our flyers, we try to have some nice photographs, try to get a little splash and dash on it. We get some nice colors, but we also always usually try to get some aerial photos of the farm, some ground shots of the farm. We also try to put a map on there. And so if you get get one of our flyers, or if you go to our website and print one off on your computer, you can take this. You can drive right to the property. We try to have the taxes on there. We try to have, and real estate taxes are a whole other matter, but we try to have those on there. We try to have a soil map, a photograph, and maybe a picture of our sign so that when you get out there, you'll know what farm it is. And you can take one of our flyers, and that's pretty much the information that you need to go look at the farm and determine whether or not it'll fit your needs.
Now, you guys got an outstanding website, and your marketing, as you've described, is about as good as you can get. You guys do a great job. You got some good mapping tools and soil maps. It's pretty simple.
We try to keep things so very simple. I think it's hard to educate and sell at the same time, so we try to keep our method of sale. We don't, a lot of guys like these computerized sales and these combo sales and board sales and everything, but we kind of stick to a pretty simple format, and it's pretty widely accepted and pretty easy to understand.
Keep it stupid simple, and like I said, it's you guys do a great job, and if anybody wants to plagiarize you, it's a good site to go to, and the way they do it, I'm sure you'd be flattered by that, as I am with some of the stuff that we do. Let's talk about land values. There's a couple sources. The USDA, I've used, I'm sure you have, for years. That comes out annually, and it's for every state in the United States, and it's broken down by croplands and pasture land. And what it does is it shows the percentage of increase or decrease on an annual basis of land values. And I was just pulling one 2017, and a couple of the states we mentioned, for example, South Dakota was down 3.1% at $2,180 an acre. Minnesota was up 1.1%. at $4,750 an acre. Iowa was up 1.9% at $8,000 an acre, and Nebraska was down 1.7% at $2,900 an acre. That's quite a difference in values, and I'm sure that has to do a lot with the production of crops and pasture land. Are you trending back up now in your area from your peak?
We don't use the USDA around here very much for land values. In Iowa, we have about three sources. We have Iowa State does a survey.
Okay.
The farm realtors, the RLI, we do a survey
right.
in our own state. Kyle Hansen with Hertz is in charge of that, and I think he's on the national presidency now, but route. But we do our own survey twice a year. Iowa State does one, and then we also have, I think it's the FDIC does one, the bankers do one. So we've got some pretty good sources locally in the state of Iowa that we can use, and actually probably our Realtors Land Institute is probably the most quoted survey in the state.
And that's been produced for many, many years, hadn't it?
As long as I've been a part of them, it has been.
Yeah. Yeah, and several of the other states do something similar. I know RLI, we started a couple years our own survey for our members and ALCs around the country, and we get to do input in terms of what's going on in our area. But this Ag Decision Maker, I've got a copy of it here in my hand, October 2018, which is fairly recent, Farmland Values, Realtors Land Institute, Chapter 2. The Iowa Farm and Ranch chapter that you're a distinguished member of. Can we kind of go over that a little bit and
sure.
explain that?
If you'll notice, that's broken down into 6 areas of the state, so it's pretty localized as far as the value.
Right, and then you have actually a chart showing the high-quality cropland, the medium-quality cropland, and the low-quality cropland, then the non-tillable pasture. And how much timber do you have in the state? Is that a fair percentage?
It depends on what part of the state. Southern Iowa, there's some. Western, southwest Iowa, there's some. Eastern Iowa, there are areas with timber along the Mississippi.
Right.
But there are up on the flatland on the prairie, why we don't have a lot of it, just along some rivers up in our area.
Right. So I'm seeing like from March to September in your high-quality cropland, March it was $10,140. In September it was $9,799, for example. What caused that decrease? All of these I'm looking at, with a few exceptions, Northwest increased a little bit. Let's see here. South Central was pretty consistent. So was Southeast, Southwest, West Central. Those were all pretty stable. And then, of course, you got your state average. You actually decreased during that period of time, March to September, from $9,392 to $9,237, which is a slight change. But, you know, every dollar is 1.7%. But most of these, actually, all of these were, except for one, Northeast was up 7%, and North Central didn't increase or decrease. The rest of them were negative, Central being the most, with down 3.5%. Any particular reason, or is that just normal movement of value?
We've been inching up the last two or three years, and we had a peak 4 or 5 years ago, and then it dropped a little, and then it's been inching back up. This is the first time I believe we had a drop in 2 or 3 years, but considering that grain prices have fallen quite a bit and rents are probably off a fair amount, that it's surprising that it hasn't changed more negatively.
So what are the factors? Is this this trade situation, is that one of the culprits, or is it the weather, or is it
weather? We've had quite a bit of weather problems in Iowa this year. We've also had there's just been a fair amount of problems with crop prices. Crop prices are off.
Yeah, because I think, 2014, internationally, we had a, just blowout in the commodities for crops. And I think, that even affected us here in North Carolina. We had several things going on in the western part, the Blue Ridge, going into Tennessee and South Carolina and northern Georgia. We called it the Golden Triangle when the funny money was out there and the second homes was hot and the developers were coming out of different parts, Miami and different parts of the country, buying up rural land in our area and breaking them up into tracts and, just selling for ridiculous prices. One of the craziest things I saw was the guy that did Hilton Head, what's his name, Bobby, I can't remember his last name, but he did this $6,000 development up in the Blue Ridge near the Boone area, $1 billion worth of infrastructure, broke it up in about 400 tracks, the equestrian, the Audubon, 13 restaurants, building 2 Class A Jack Nicklaus golf courses, moving mountaintops. I mean, just ridiculous. And, you bring a client up there, and they had their own agents, and, of course, they had to escort you. And they would pull out this glossy map of the project, and on there they would say they were selling, they were pricing based on views. So if you was interested in lot 132 and it didn't have any views other than local views, it was $450,000. And then if you got up to lot 473 that was up on a peak and had unlimited views, it was $1.2 million. I've never seen land sold by views, but they sold quite a bit of course they went bankrupt. And group out of Georgia bought them, but different type of marketing in different situations. Going back to pricing, you were talking about sources. Do you not use your MLS, your multiple listing local, for your land values?
Not generally. I end up using. We do our own tracking. We have a large spreadsheet in the office where we track sales, auctions, stuff that's sold privately on a gigantic spreadsheet that's broken down by county and by township. So then if we go work in an area where we're not familiar with, we go to the courthouse, talk to appraisers, get comparable sales rounded up, and then do our own, put our own comps together. Right.
But, you know, the value of anything is what somebody's willing to pay. I wrote a course for the North Carolina Board of Appraisers. If you're an MAI appraiser, you also have to be dual licensed and be a realtor as well. And, you know, there's no land education. It sounds crazy. I'm the only land instructor. I created a four-hour CE class. We have to have 8 hours here in North Carolina, four required and four elective. And it's called Introduction to Land Brokerage. And I've been teaching it now since then. But I am the only land instructor with the only land class in the state of North Carolina. And then as I turn around, if you call your Iowa Real Estate Commission and tell them that you want to take a CE class on the subject of land, I'm told I'm probably about the only one in the country. I mean, it's crazy. But we do need land education, and that's what this show's all about, Sean, is to give people an opportunity to learn some of the things I have and you and our other guests and help educate not only the public but our fellow real estate agents and realtors. What's some of the most unique auctions you've done in your career? I know there's a couple you could talk about.
Oh, a few years ago, we did the Bird Dog Ranch.
The Bird Dog Ranch.
We did 1,008 acres in Union County, which is down south of Des Moines, and we broke it into two tracts, and it was cropland, CRP, and timber, and it's a nationally known farm. One of the Trump sons has been out there and hunted, where they run bird dogs on horseback and do trials, and there's a campground out there, and it was an outstanding place. Some people had owned it as a group and wanted to part company, and we had a public auction on that and sold it in two tracts a few years ago. That was a lot of fun. One day a few years ago for Rural and Rural, we sold a farm in extreme eastern Iowa. I think it was Clinton County along the Mississippi, and we sold in Goose Lake, Iowa. Not everybody's been to Goose Lake, Iowa. That was a neat place. So we get around a lot of neat places. Last summer and last winter, we sold in Blencoe, Iowa a couple of times, which is halfway to Omaha from Sioux City. We've sold in Sioux City, Iowa. We've sold some pretty interesting stuff. And a year ago, we sold one of the more unique properties in the Iowa Great Lakes area, which is a resort area not far from where I'm at right here. And we sold the original inn at Okoboji a year ago, and we did it on a private auction where they posted bids online, and then we had a phone bid. We sold 82 acres with 350 feet of shorefront on West Lake Okoboji, and it was absolutely a great, great old inn.
What was the vintage of it, roughly?
What?
How old was the inn?
Over 100 years.
Wow. And that, say, was the oldest one in the area?
One of them, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of them that have long since been gone. This
sure.
was basically the last big one on the lake. And it ended up bringing $5.7
million. Wow.
And it ended up being a housing development, and they tore it all down. They're selling five executive lots on the lake.
Wow. That's crazy. How big is that lake?
3-4 miles by 7 miles.
Wow, that's pretty good size.
2-3 miles by 7 miles.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Beautiful lake. It's 180 feet, 200 feet deep. It stays crystal clear all summer.
Sounds nice. I'm ready. Let's go, Rodney.
We've had the opportunity to sell a lot of really cool properties scattered around the Midwest. And, you know, some of them are easy, some of them are not. A few years ago, I think in 1993, we sold Mid Plains Feedlot, which was a very large farm in western Clay County and on the O'Brien County line, and it was a gigantic feedlot that was originally Group 21. And I'm trying to think of the old NBC news announcers. David Huntley and that group had
right.
started that feedlot back in the 60s. And so we just had a lot of fun and have been able to sell a lot of really great property.
Sounds like it. You know, there's something about auctions that's just different. I've always enjoyed going to them. I bought land at auctions personally. I've developed over 60 rural subdivisions over the years. And then, of course, Dale and I team up. And, you know, sometimes we'll do one a year, sometimes we'll do five. It just depends on the market and the necessity of the seller. But there's just something about it. It's exciting, you know. And you get paid usually in 30 days, you know. It's sold where is, as is. It's up to the buyer to do the due diligence. Of course, there's full disclosure. But it's just a total different way of doing real estate. I find very refreshing.
We sold two little tracts last Thursday night, and then we're coming back and selling these three farms this Thursday morning, and then next week we're selling 160 acres over by Ayrshire, Iowa, in Palo Alto County, which is about 40 miles from here. And then we come back the last week in November, and we're selling two quarter sections for a family in Dickinson County. So it's interesting November this year.
Sounds like it. Where do you get your sellers from? Are these estate sales or just
most of the sellers inherited it and
absentee
company. That's the majority of the work is attorneys that we know,
right,
and we've done business with in the past, and that's where our buyers come from, people we've dealt with in the past as well.
Sure. And bank foreclosures, you do some of those?
No, not many. We don't have a lot of those in Iowa.
Right. What's going on with the young farmers? This is a big concern and something that I'm pushing. I'm trying to get several shows. I know Farm Credit here, and you've got Farm Credits all over the country. What a great organization. But I'm real concerned about, you know, these young farmers. We need more of them. And what's going on in your area? We've got about a minute and a half left here.
We should hook you up with Mr. Mike Gabor. He's an attorney out of Algona, Iowa. He does a ton of work for young farmer loan programs.
Love to have him on my show.
And he would be a great guy. He's also a great attorney, by the way, and he
Absolutely.
Also does a lot of estate work, and
right,
we get the pleasure of working with him. But that is a concern. I've heard rumors the last week of two young farmers that are going to hang it up. They burned through their cash, and they're going to go try something else. These times are tough. These times, it's making better business people out of them. They're learning how to hang on to a dollar, but the problem is that we don't have many more dollars left to stretch until we get some more income and then get our grain prices up, and we need better yields than what we had this year, and rents are high. So it's a tough ballgame.
Just quickly, with less than a minute here, anything you want to finish up the show with, and I want you to do an advertising again, your website, your phone number, how they can contact you, if you would, John.
You know, we help people buy, sell, trade, do a lot of 1031, and we also help people with very tough family issues and family problems. Anybody can sell the easy one. We kind of get called in to help do the tough ones, and people can go to our website, theacreco.com, or they can give us a call, 712-262-3529. Go on the web, call us, give us an email. We'd be sure glad to help them any way we can.
Well, I appreciate you being on the show today, John. It's quite a pleasure, and you're one of my best buddies here. And look forward to seeing you in Albuquerque, New Mexico, 1st of March. I'll be sending my check in here pretty soon to get my reservation in. And I'm just so proud of our organization, and we're just growing and growing. And I hope the show helps recruit some. If you're interested in land or farms, our education is second to none, and it's also proven that, as you know, John, the more education you have in our industry, usually the more money you make. So,
well, you talk about young farmers. We need young real estate people.
Absolutely.
Too.
Yep. I told my kids, don't hire anybody over 30, and let them grow with you. But anyway, thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any guests or topics you'd like to suggest, we'd appreciate that. All questions are welcome, and all of our guests may be emailed with your questions or concerns as well. This show is for the public and, most importantly, for real estate agents who do not have a source for land education. Rodney, how do they get in touch with us?
Well, they can tune us in here, Lou, every Saturday morning from 7 to 8 for the Land Show Pro with Lou Jewell. And also, they can download the Simple Radio app and take us anywhere they go.
No way.
Yes, way. Anywhere in the whole world.
The whole wide world.
Yeah, or they can download the Simple Radio app or go to our website. Go to WKTE1090.com. Nominated 5 years in a row for Beach and Oldies.
Are we going to win this weekend?
I hope so. We'll know this weekend.
Yeah, I know. So are you going down?
Probably. I'm going to try to.
Okay. It sounds like fun. We'll bring home the bacon.
That's right.
We've been nominated as the best beach radio, beach and oldie goldie show on the East Coast, which is quite an honor. All of the shows are broadcast on Saturday mornings, 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. here locally. And then we download them onto a website, GoDaddy site I created called letstalkland.net. So that's www.letstalklandwithoutthe.net. We also download on Podbeam, Spotify, Facebook, YouTube, and more. On that website, it has all of our shows, and that's where you can send questions or comments. And my email is lou@mylandpro.com. My cell number is 336-669-1405. See you next week.